connecting to the AOC Podcast Network. Enjoy your stay. This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana and the region we know as Acadiana. We focus on the warm joie de vivre, or joy of living, exemplified by our people, the beautiful scenery, and the cultural traditions passed down generation after generation. There are many reasons people decide to make Lafayette their home. Lafayette is also a wonderful place to visit and experience the unique and delicious cuisine that locals take for granted. Today's guest is Charlie Goodson, a principal of Southern Hospitality Kitchens and managing partner of Charlie G's and Social Southern Table and Bar. The group also owns Pete's and the Tap Room. Just this year, in 2017, Charlie was named Restaurateur of the Year by the Louisiana Travel Promotion Association. And this award is nothing new, as Charlie was also honored by the Acadiana Restaurant Association as Restaurateur of the Year in 1987, 1988, and 1994. Founder of Eat Lafayette, an annual promotion and celebration of the treasure trove of home-owned restaurants, Charlie Goodson is also a beloved mentor to other restaurateurs. Known for his knack for quality, service, and exceptional cuisine, all of the restaurants Charlie Goodson has managed are not only popular for business executives, but they become the go-to restaurant for important family and holiday celebrations. Charlie, it's a privilege to welcome you to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you, Jan.
Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Yeah, we've met through a couple of people close to me. My daughter, Taylor, enjoyed her time working with you as hostess. So thank you for that.
We enjoyed having her. A great employee, and she was fun to be around.
Thank you. And also our mutual friend, Ed Crampy, who you worked with and I worked with. Miss him.
He was a mentor in this industry to me. He was a go-to guy for difficult decisions that you had to make, and talk about concepts and stuff. I'd always give Ed a ring, and he always said, time for me to go by and discuss things. He was great. Miss him a lot.
I do too. And I also learned why drive-through restaurants don't want people to go in. He always taught me the backstory. They make a mess. They use all the ketchup and napkins.
he had that industry down. He was great. Hard worker, focused. He was a mess.
Yeah, our mess.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's talk about your background. I know you're not originally from Louisiana.
No.
How did you end up here?
Well, my parents are Louisianians. So my dad was from Oakdale. My mother was from Baton Rouge, and they met at LSU and both graduated from there in 1935.
Oh, my goodness.
But his first job was in Alabama. So my brothers and sisters and I were all born in Selma and Montgomery. We went back and forth between those two cities for a while. And so my dad, in the 60s, I had an opportunity to come to Louisiana and go to work with his brother. His brother had an oil field contracting business, Soloco, which was bought up by Newport Mining Company eventually. Anyway, they jumped at the chance to come back to Louisiana. And I stayed in Louisiana. I had already graduated from high school, went to college a couple of universities over there, and didn't do so well. Wasn't a good student. Went into the service. When I was in the service, my parents moved here, and when I came back, to Montgomery, and but I didn't feel comfortable there. I never felt like an Alabamian,
right?
For whatever reason, I don't know. So my parents were here, and they said, "Hey, come on to Louisiana. You know, we have a university in town, oil industry. If you don't want to go to school anymore, or whatever, you know." So I did, and I never left.
You liked it.
I moved here in '67, and I never even considered going anywhere else, really.
What a great story. I mean, I didn't realize you had been here since 67. Mm-hmm. And Lafayette was a different place back then.
Yes, it was. It was. For our industry, it was very different. And for other industries, the medical, the university, mm-hmm. everything has just grown so much.
Right. Did you start out in the restaurant business, or did you go back to college?
What
did you do?
I did go back to college, but I had to work to go to college. The best place to go to work where you could actually go to work and be with your friends at the same time mm-hmm. was the bars.
Right.
So I went to work for Ken Gilbo at the Keg that year, and that was the year he opened in 67. And I worked with him there. And going to school, working in the bars was tough. And then kids do it today as well. But there was no closing hour in those days. And you
stayed. Oh, really? They didn't close at 2?
No.
And people weren't ready to go home at 2?
No, they were not ready to go home. But I went to school more. I was not a good student. I did not have my heart into it. I had a crazy major. I was majoring in civil engineering, which was way over my head. And I don't know why. But anyway, at some point, I realized that I wanted to be in the hospitality business.
Mm-hmm. You enjoyed working with Ken Gilbo.
Yes, I enjoyed that. Uh-huh. Yeah. I tell myself, I came up, I have a master's degree in Cajun entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. My first boss was a Gilbo. My second boss was a Guidry.
Okay.
And my third boss was an Hebert mm-hmm. in this business. None of them had a college degree, but unbelievable entrepreneurs.
The Holy Trinity instead of onions and
garlic
and bell pepper.
They knew how to open businesses
yeah.
and how to work, and mm-hmm. And I followed their example.
And so you were here in 67. Mm-hmm. I know just 5 years later, you were a partner with Earl Hebert, from
right.
what I understand, and I knew him as an artist.
Right.
I didn't know the history of Judge Roy Beans. How did that come about?
I was working for Preston Guidry at the time at Pete's, the original Pete's, which was more of a college hangout.
That wasn't on, nothing
on
was
General
done.
Mouton.
Yeah, it
wasn't
on
Johnson. Where the
Bulldog
is now. Mm-hmm. And Earl was a good friend of Preston's. They were high school buddies. And Earl would come in after they would close the restaurant, and we became real good friends mm-hmm. there. And then I went to work for him at the Beef and Ale restaurant as a waiter.
Okay.
So I was waiting tables for Earl at the Beef and Ale, and I told him I wanted to open my own place. Mm-hmm. And so on our days off, we would drive around looking at locations.
Were you saving as you were working? Did you have it?
No.
Just, I want to do this.
Yeah. I wanted to do this. In those days, it wasn't a factor of money. Unbelievably, you did not have to have a lot of money to open a business. Whereas today, that's the first consideration. Where am I going to get the money mm-hmm. to open Judge Roy Beans? Earl had $2,000 because he was in the business. He had a little money coming in,
which was a lot.
I borrowed $2,000. My daddy co-signed for me.
I was going to say, you went to the bank. You had to have a co-signer.
Oh, yeah. Guarantee Bank in those days. Mm-hmm. And so for $4,000, we opened a business. You know, it takes hundreds of thousands to do it today.
Right.
But, in most cases.
Uh-huh.
But in those days, we did all the work ourselves, all the painting, all the carpentry, as much electrical as we could get away with.
How did you pick the location? Where was it?
It
for
was,
people that don't know.
It was, the building was the original, I think they called it the Ritchie Plantation, or the Harsh Ritchie family had lived there for a while. I forget the original name of the old house, which is Cafe Vermilionville today.
Mm-hmm. On Pin Hill.
But it had been, Louis Michaud had gotten a long-term lease on the building, and opened a restaurant in around 67 or 68, called it Maison Acadien. And Pat and Margie Pasteur were the managers, mm-hmm. and which they eventually went down the street and did Chez Pasteur. But it didn't last very long, and I asked Mr. Michaud why. He said it was too far out of town.
On Pinhook Road.
At the corner of Pinhook and South College, was too far out of town at that time.
Isn't that something? When you look at it now,
said, nobody goes past that light. He said,
wow.
You know, so It had been closed a year.
And that didn't concern you?
No,
no. Because you could afford it.
We walked in that building, Earl and I, that day, and Cecil Trahan had a little office in there for real estate. It wasn't his office, but he had a young lady in there, a realtor, and the rest of the building was kind of boarded up. So we asked if we could see the building. She said, sure. We went in through all the plates and were there. The silverware was there.
Oh,
the
gosh.
Tables were there.
Did it have the same look, Charlie, with the wood floors? That was all?
Well, the decor was set up at more of a restaurant, and we wanted to do a saloon. Mm-hmm. So in that venue, we changed that look. But, you know, the original floors and all that we kept because we wanted that old look. But Earl, my partner, was amazing at seeing things and putting them out. I mean, the colors, the textures, the wooden Indian, everything that we did in that mm-hmm. old building was all Earl's ideas, and he was an amazing partner.
That's so interesting. So how long was Judge Roy Beans open?
Around 10 years.
I remember that.
Yeah, 81. Earl wanted to get out of the hospitality business altogether. He just wanted to concentrate on his art.
Uh-huh. Was it the hours or just
his passion was art. Mm-hmm. You know, he was extremely good restaurateur from the concept side, mm-hmm. but he did not want to manage people. He did not want to have people that he needed to manage. He was a concept guy and an artist. Mm-hmm. And so he just, I just want to paint. I don't want to be in this business anymore. And I had worked with Ken Veron at the keg for Ken Gilbo with Ken Veron, and he and his career was wanted to get out of the bar business and get into the restaurant business. Judge Roy Beans needed a change, mm-hmm. either. And I had gotten married, started having kids, so the restaurant business seemed to me to be more stable.
Right.
Something that long-term, the bar business is very fickle. Mm-hmm. It changes, you know. I can remember.
The place to go to.
Yes. Yeah. You know, every time John Travolta would make a movie, the whole music scene would change.
Urban Cowboy.
Yes, to Saturday Night Fever.
And that was about the time of that. Huh?
Oh, yeah.
That was, yeah.
So it was very fickle. And so Ken and I decided to change it into a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And he bought Earl's half of the business, and we closed it and remodeled it and changed it into Cafe Vermilionville.
Okay.
In 81.
Uh-huh.
And then we had a good run with that, and we decided to go to the south side of Lafayette where the oil business was supposed to move there.
Right.
So let's follow it, you know.
Mm-hmm. What year was that? You remember?
85.
85, okay.
Yeah, that's when we opened Charlie G's together. Ken and I opened that together.
Yeah. So what was the economy like, Charlie, in 85 for you?
85 was good. It was hopeful. You could see young entrepreneurs in the oil industry were doing some fun and good things. But when we signed the lease there in 1985, next door was Superior Oil with about 90 employees. Next to them was Tenneco Oil with about 400 employees.
So what a great lunch spot, huh?
Yeah.
And dinner.
And by the time the fit-out was done, both of those buildings were empty.
Oh, my goodness. Because I moved here in 83, like I was saying, and I did oil and gas work. Mm. By 86.
86
there
was the year.
Nothing.
Was, yep.
Nothing going on.
It went south in 86 for a few years. We did lunch for two for the price of a barrel of oil.
What was it then?
$5.20. We did lunch for two for $5.20.
Did you break even?
No.
But you were keeping things going.
Yeah, we would sell them a glass of tea or a martini or, you know, they had some add-ons there, uh-huh. but the actual promotion to get them in the
door. Just to get them in the door. So I guess the liquor sales were what you needed. And maybe people needed a drink at that point.
We all needed a drink at that point.
That was a tough time.
It was. It was very tough.
So you and Ken Veron were partners in both?
Yes. And in that year, we had Cafe Vermilionville and Charlie mm-hmm. G's, and we almost starved to death.
Right.
So we were thinking, how in the world are we going to get out of this, you know? And we were he and I were going back and forth as owners, looking at Charlie G's, going to Cafe Vermilion,
trying to figure out. Yeah.
So we decided, you know, the only way we're going to survive this if you take one of them and I take one of them and we focus, manage it, eliminate your management team, just focus on
it.
One restaurant and try to survive.
So you parted amicably.
So yes, oh very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah. He obviously couldn't take Charlie G's. I wanted to stay in that old building because I had already been there 15 years. So, but it just didn't make sense.
Since that was your namesake,
You know, I didn't want it. I didn't want the thing named Charlie G's.
Who decided that?
Ken and the landlord of the shopping center, who was helping us with the project, had seen Mr. B's in New Orleans, and they'd seen some other, and so they said Charlie G's has a ring to it.
It does.
And so that's how it became Charlie G's.
And I was asking you before we started taping, you spell your name I-E, Charlie with an I-E, but that's E-Y.
Yes.
And
the design team that helped us and the landlord and everybody that was involved, we were looking at doing a sign for the building, and it looked better with a Y, with a sweeping bottom of the Y coming underneath the name.
Yeah,
so
it does look
we changed
good.
It to EY on the building.
Now, I hear you say you're a manager. Are you also a chef?
No.
You don't cook?
No.
I mean, not that you don't cook, but you're not a chef.
I have spent some time in the kitchen, but I've always been a front house person. Waiter, busboy, bartender, a floor manager, I worked in the kitchen for about a year at Cafe Vermilionville, more as a kitchen manager to help the chef at the time. Was a young guy.
Move things along.
Yeah. The inventorying, controls, accepting product, pricing out the menu, and then I would just work the line as a line cook, you know, whatever station needed help. And I did that for about a year until he got his feet on the ground and it was Pat Mole at the time.
Oh, my goodness. Pat started there? I mean, he started... Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was his first
what
chef
a great
job.
Chef, yeah. I know you've had many great chefs.
Well, I've had some, but, you know, Holly's been there almost 16 years.
She's been there that long?
Yeah.
Oh, she's excellent. Yeah, Holly Gadding.
I've worked with a lot, but, I mean, we've been lucky to keep
good
quality people.
You want to keep her happy.
People. Oh, yeah. Well,
Yeah. So back in the 80s then, you're got a young family, I guess, at that point, and you're the owner of Charlie G's in a down economy. Were you bartending, waiting tables, or how were you trying to keep that going?
I was a front of house manager. You know, my wife and I managed it, and she did the back of the house paper shuffle. And I did the front of the house greeting and kissing babies and
keeping people coming back.
And we'd open that door every morning after the kids got to school or daycare, wherever. Mm-hmm. We'd open the door, and she would go home when the kids got off of school, and I'd lock it up that night at midnight and go home and start it all over the next day.
Did you ever think about moving or just saying, this is too much?
It never entered my mind. It never did. I'm a homebody, I guess, and my kids went to school here, and they still work with us in the business, and I never even considered moving.
Right.
Although we've had restaurants in other towns, and we spent a lot of time in those other towns with those projects.
I read about that. I think I'd been to your restaurant in Destin. Mm-hmm. I know you've had restaurants in New Orleans, but this has been your base.
Yes.
And this is your base now for your businesses.
Yes. I'm not good at managing concepts outside of Lafayette, unfortunately. And Jody and Mark, my partners, are younger. And eventually, I can see us doing projects again outside of Lafayette. But in those days, I travel. One day I went to all four restaurants, two in New Orleans, one in Lafayette. I woke up that morning, went to, and then
you
left those two restaurants in New Orleans and went to Destin.
Oh my gosh,
that afternoon.
And not just, you have to wake up one day and say, what am I doing?
What am I doing?
Yeah.
And I wasn't very good at it either, so that even made it.
Take it out on your employees, huh?
Well, no, I just...
I can't see you doing that. I'm kidding, because I can't see you.
It's more of a personal thing to me, than riding 400 miles and looking around the business and see what needs to be changed and you know what how is the culture being developed in there. I couldn't really get my arms around it.
Right. And Charlie G's, to me, and I know your other restaurants also, but it captures Lafayette. It's kind of an upscale, fine cuisine, but people, that's Lafayette. I mean, it really captures, I think,
well,
who we are.
Thank
you know,
appreciate that thought.
We go there for our family occasions. Right. It's always the go-to place. That's why I put that in the intro, that, you know, that's Mother's Day, Christmas Eve. It's a special place for celebrations.
Yes, I appreciate that because we're happy to be that.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just thinking in my head, Charlie, from 72 with Judge Roy Beans to 85, 86, 87, that era, for you to be out in South Lafayette, that was dramatic growth in that corridor.
Yes.
To go from people not passing up South College on Pinhook. I mean, Lafayette, that the mall was opened. I'm just thinking through the growth of that corridor, because that wasn't like that in the 70s.
No.
Was profound growth for you to say, we're going to open up way out there.
Yeah, it was kind of...
Fernwood wasn't out there. I mean, there wasn't business or traffic.
It was called New Flanders Road. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even paved.
Was it called that when
New Flanders Road, yeah. And it became...
At that point...
It must have changed to Ambassador Caffrey. We in the late 70s or early 80s, and then it was single, you know, the dual lane. And when we were opening, they were four laning it, and then they built the bridge. So we had a lot of challenges during those years.
Did you anticipate the growth that corridor has seen at that time? Were you thinking this will be...
I think the landowners out there were very entrepreneurial in their, you know, the Shine Youngs, Jerry Young's dad, and the Andruses. Mm-hmm. They were very forward-thinking people, and so I felt that they were going to grow, that part of town. They owned a lot of the land, and the saloons and the Bustanis. So
they're business people.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was destined, you know, how fast was anybody's guess, but it was going to definitely grow.
Yeah. You know, I learned that, Charlie, this isn't on topic with your restaurant, but people wonder about the growth of North and South Lafayette. And a lot of people in North Lafayette wanted to keep their family property, farm it, or they just wanted to keep it. But when you looked south, boy, it was booming because they were selling their land. And you get it and finance it, owner financing. You could get property much easier. So it wasn't like a planned, you know, we're just going to go south. But property was available for sale, large tracts of land.
Forward-thinking entrepreneurs were the ones that owned the land.
Yeah. And the others, I think, were more family. They wanted to keep things in their family, which is totally understandable, too. But so you experienced that. So that location was perfect. I don't know if you even had that vision in your own head at the time.
I wish I could take credit for that. Just happened to be at the right place at the right time, I guess.
Yeah. So you owned the restaurant with you and Dell ran the restaurant. And can you kind of go through the next process? I know now that you're partnering with other people with Southern
Mark,
Hospitality.
Yeah. Mark and Jody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So talk about that some. How did you partner with the Crampies? And I know Jody Ferguson is the son-in-law of Ed.
Yeah, Ed, like it was a mentor to me and a good friend. And I would go to him with ideas or problems and get, you know, get him to hear me out. Mm-hmm. Is this the right direction? Is this the not? You know, what do you think? And
he would tell you.
Yes, you know, he would be very blunt. I mean, you know, Ed. I mean, he's not going to sugarcoat it. You know, that's a stupid idea. You know, why are you doing that? Or that has some good. You know, that has some growth potential or whatever. So, I went to him when I became a little, in my 70s. I went to him and I said, you know, I need an exit strategy, Ed. You know, I don't want to end up with a bus tub over my head in the middle of this dining room.
And no plan.
And no plan for my kids and wife. You know, they dumped this on them. So he said his son, Mark, was a chef in Austin, and he wanted to come to Lafayette, back home. and would I consider sitting down with he and Jody and just talk it out, see what they thought. And we became friends and became they became interested in joining me with at Charlie G's and make it that our base restaurant and do more projects together.
Right.
So that's what we did. I sold them the restaurant and stayed connected with the group, and we opened other restaurants together.
Yeah. So when did Southern Social Table and Bar open? What year was that?
So that was in our third year together. So that would be
2014?
Well, actually, it's five years.
Has it been
old.
5 years?
Yes,
yeah, 2012.
Years yeah.
Okay, that's a beautiful restaurant for
yes,
people. I'm sure people listening in Lafayette know, but right in the middle of town.
Yeah, that was
just
wonderful. Good fun. That was, and that goes back to the Cajun entrepreneurship. Preston Guidry owned those buildings, Pete's and Social. And
we bought
them both from him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful building. And I'm sure people have eaten there, but even if you don't like vegetables, you'll eat Brussels sprouts at Social. I just can't even, you know, my husband's
Mark,
I don't know, but I'm like, I got to tell you, if you're going to eat Brussels sprouts, go to Social.
Yeah, Mark and his team have a really good heading. And
it's so
Kyle
much fun.
Waters and Claire Burton are in the kitchen with him. They're so much fun to work with. They look forward to going to work there every day. So.
And it's a different feel than a lot of other restaurants
it
in
is.
Lafayette.
Yeah, it is. I think that Austin influence on Mark is shown there.
Yeah,
you know,
he's a super talented chef, and we're so lucky that you got him back home.
Yes, it is nice for the city to have a talented chef like that.
Right. So you guys also own Pete's, the Tap Room, and Social.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about that. Are you? You're not the managing partner with those. That's Jody,
no, Jody
Ferguson.
Jody is our managing partner, and Mark is our corporate chef. So projects go through that way of looking at things. We sit down and talk about the business side of it, the concept side of it, what does Lafayette need, you know. And Jody crunches the numbers, and Mark does the and I bust the tables.
You do, when you need to.
Opens up. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a fun relationship. I really enjoy working with them. They bring a lot of new thoughts to the table that may not have occurred to me. Mm-hmm. And they give me, let me have some input, you know, so it's fun.
Yeah. And your daughters work with the business right?
Our oldest daughter, Anna, is the head of marketing for all four concepts. And Claire does payroll and takes care of some of the units as well.
Right. Are there plans for any other restaurants, or is this?
Oh yeah, I think there will be. You know, we just. I think we, as far as local, we want to see the things kind of stabilize a little bit before we.
It's
jump.
Been a tough economy.
Yes.
I mean, we were talking about the 80s, but. The
right
oil
now,
field has really...
It's challenging right now.
People thought this would be over way before now.
Right.
But people are hanging on.
Yes,
it seems
are.
People are eating out. They might not be moving, you know, as far as building a new home or moving in Lafayette, but they're staying put and hanging
it's
on.
It's a resilient city.
Very resilient.
And people don't... A lot of people don't want to move. And they will stay here under situations that they're offered better. In other cities, but turn them down to stay here. And some people can't. Some people have to leave. They have to move to take an opportunity. But a good men of our great people, our good, stable people that we need in town have decided to stay no matter what.
Yeah.
And they make a big, great contribution to keeping the city going.
Right. Well, I'm glad you have more on the horizon. So once we get past this dip in the
oil
and gas market.
We're reviewing a project every day because it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we pull the trigger on it is whether it makes financial sense and if the city needs this project right now or do we need the project right now. But every day we are looking at new projects, yes.
And you've been able to have your stability then with the partners. You've got the succession plan in the event you needed to take a back seat for a while or something for the future for your family. So that's you've got good partners there.
Yes.
I'd like to get you to talk some about Eat Lafayette, okay. The local promotion campaign that you founded. What year did that start? Am I putting you on the spot?
No.
It's been a while.
It's not that good. I think it's 13 or 14 years ago. The LCVC president at that point was Gerald Brooke.
Right.
And Gerald was on our restaurant association board for years and interacted with him a lot in the hospitality industry. He was very active. And I saw a similar thing in Denver, Colorado. It was called Eat Denver. And their challenge was that there were no local restaurants. They were all chains.
Mm-hmm.
So they had no culinary gravitas, they thought.
Unique to their area.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they said, we need to tell people about Denver and that we have some good restaurants.
And they
Yeah. So they
not as many as we do.
No. So I said, wow, that's an interesting idea. But I felt that Lafayette needed some emphasis on local restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
That the influence of the big box chains of in all areas, clothing, jewelry, and hospitality, were coming to Lafayette. And I didn't want people to forget about the local entrepreneurship, the mom and pop eating places here in town that were the basis of our tourism and our cuisine. You know, Louisiana, and South Louisiana in particular, is one of the few places in all America that has its own cuisine, you know.
Right.
It's unique to us. You know, you go to Florida, you can go to Texas, and barbecue, I guess, a little bit. But the Cajun Creole cuisine is unique to us. Mm-hmm. And so I went to Gerald and proposed an Eat Lafayette. And he saw value in it. And with his managerial structure of LCVC, combining with our enthusiasm, it was a really nice combination.
You had the horsepower of government
the organizational
agency
skills
that promoted it anyway.
And the money behind to market it.
He was a great director. I love Ben Berth a lot too. Our current director Gerald was there forever, and Ben has done an outstanding job.
He's put this project on steroids and really promoted it, and it's really, really blossomed over the years.
Did the local restaurants buy into it at first?
Oh, yeah. No. They did not at first. No. What?
What's he up to? He's a competitor.
That's a self-promoting something. He's going on there or whatever. No, they did not see value.
I think we
had 18 restaurants that friends of mine come along with me.
Yeah.
And then last year we had like 110.
Don't we have, like, someone's told me per capita, we just have a very high number of home-owned restaurants compared to most cities.
We do. And, you know, there's a few unique cities like ours that still hold on to their local ownerships. You know, most of the cities have been just overtaken by large chains, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's a place for that. We need the employees. We need the, you know, but we don't want to forget about our local, the dollars that spent in a local restaurant that stay in town are
well, they're crucial.
Yes,
I mean, when you think about the Giudices and all the different families for generations have worked in their restaurants.
The Hearst family with Poor Boys, Riverside Inn, you know, 70,
delicious.
80 years, Don's downtown. It's just amazing that they pass from generation to generation and still have a quality product and passion for what they do and go there every day, put long hours in, you know. The restaurants that belong to Eat Lafayette, most of them, you're going to see a family member when you go
when
there.
When you walk in.
At the host stand, bussing tables, working in the kitchen. That's what makes it so unique. It's such a family business.
I guess it was Paul Prudhomme that made the blackened seafood popular, but it's tough to travel and when you see Cajun food in New York or somewhere because it's a lot of pepper, and that's not what we have here.
An old chef told me one time, never eat ethnic food in a town that doesn't have a large population of that ethnicity. Right. So you don't eat Cajun in New York because there's no Cajuns up there.
You'd be disappointed. Yeah. And they do their own thing really well.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, a lot of people caught on to that concept or that idea when Paul was so popular with that Black and Redfish. And they would start off by ordering andouille from Louisiana, crawfish from Louisiana, crab meat from Louisiana, and then they try to transport it to St. Louis. But then they got tired of paying for that product. Mm-hmm. So they would switch to kielbasa instead of andouille.
Oh.
They would still
call it Cajun.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Chinese crawfish instead of Louisiana crawfish. And so the cuisine just died in front of them. I mean, they just go away. You know, so very few people have the tenacity to really do it authentically that far away.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, if somebody wanted to open up a restaurant today, Charlie, do you think they would have the same environment? You talked about the money being a big, I don't know if it's an impediment. I don't know if you meant that. But you have to have access to funds.
Capital, yes.
To capital. But what do you have any advice for up-and-coming chefs? Like, what would they do to break into the business?
I think everybody's going to have a different situation. In my case, when I realized I was not cut out to be a civil engineer and I wanted to stay in the hospitality industry, I turned to the university for curriculum, and there was none. There was no classes for my calling at all.
They didn't have the hospitality program then?
No, they had a couple of courses in animal husbandry, a meat course, butchering.
To learn about meat, yeah.
Yeah, but that was it, and that was in the... I don't know what curriculum it was even in, but that was nothing. So I said, well, I'm just going to have to go out and learn from the people.
On the job.
Yes, and learn and started. And my first managerial job was at Pete's in 68 or 69. Well, 68, because we opened it together. Me and Jimmy Guidry were the first two employees of Pete's.
Oh, Hub City.
Yeah. Uh-huh. We were the first two employees of Pete's, along with Preston and his brother. Pete Guidry, who was named after. Anyway, I just looking back, I had to learn so much about, and you don't learn so much when you're successful. Our first venture, Judge Roy Bean, was successful. You don't learn that much because everything, you thought you were a genius. You know, this thing is working. I don't have to pay any attention
when, in
to
fact,
it.
The liquor was popular.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was just happened to be at the right place at the right time. And so when things slowed down, when the economy slowed down, you turned around and said, man, I'm not as smart as I thought I was. I got to learn how to do inventory control, how to get product in here and price it correctly, hire the right people, know what to pay them. You know, there's a payroll I have to meet, and there's a level I can't go over in order, so... Those kinds of things you had to learn on the job, and it took years. And, in retrospect, I wish there would have been a curriculum to go to. I would have enjoyed school a lot more then and been focused on it.
Right. And there is a hospitality curriculum now at UL Lafayette.
Yes.
So.
And on the job training at the same time, I've been working with the university. Helping him with that program off and on. And
do you have interns that come in? Do people want to intern
always,
with you at
we
your
always
restaurant?
Have an intern from either John Foltz or UL all the time in all the places. But I mean, a group of us were at a restaurant tours were asked to come and talk to the students and talk to the professors. And they said, Charlie, we're losing. These kids graduate and they go into the industry and they quit, they move on. And I said, well, that's interesting. Let's see, kind of get to the bottom of that, Are they working in the industry while they're going to school? Well, no, most of them aren't.
Oh, they don't even know how hard, like it's
no,
taxing.
No, they didn't realize they got to work New Year's
every
Eve.
Every weekend. Nights.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Every Saturday night, every Friday night. They didn't realize that. So when they got out and they said, oh, my God, I don't want to work all weekends.
Yeah.
You know,
I'd
so
like
they
to work Thursday at lunch. Yeah.
So they moved on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And So they instituted a program where they all needed to work in the industry to get a feel for it, to understand the late hours. And when we're working, everybody else is off. That's when...
Well, you allow us to celebrate our special occasions, but we take that for granted that you're going to be open and not... Well, I took off, too, on Valentine's night. Yeah. You know, we expect the restaurants to
Christmas
cater
Eve,
to us.
New Year's Eve, that's where you need to be open and you need to be there. Uh-huh.
So. And, you know, that's not just... your industry, the hospitality industry.
No, it
it's like teachers, lawyers.
No
you get into it and you're like, this isn't what I thought, you know?
No one is working 40-hour week if they have an entrepreneurial spirit and want to do something. I don't care what you're in. Retail, if you're thinking you're going to go to work for 40 hours a week and go home, then you
get a job at the mall.
Yeah, you get a job and be happy. And some people are very happy that way. Mm-hmm. But people that have some drive and entrepreneurial spirit aren't working 40 hours. They're working way more than that.
Right. And it doesn't seem like work, does it?
And like it, yes.
Did you feel like it was a job?
Never. No.
You never have?
And I always couldn't wait to get to Charlie G's, couldn't wait to get to it wasn't, I never had a real job. It's always been fun.
Right. We're all better off for having you in our community, Charlie.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. Thank you so much for
making time
today.
Hope I didn't jibber-jabber.
Didn't know your backstory. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that people listening knew, you know, how many restaurants in Lafayette that you've touched. I didn't even think to mention Hub City Diner. I know Jimmy Guidry, and I guess we all take you where you are when we meet you.
Yes.
And I didn't realize you're very diverse, the knowledge you've gained. That was your college, you know, these different restaurants. So thank you for taking time to share your story with us.
You're welcome.
I want to thank your family, too, for the work they do in giving us these local restaurants.
The unsung heroes of this industry is the spouses.
They really are.
Yes.
Because I'm sure Dell was raising the girls, and you were busy nights and weekends. And
big sacrifice that they have to make, whether it's the husband or the wife. Someone is making a sacrifice so that the other one can work.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to all in the industry. And thank you again, Charlie Goodson of Charlie G's and Southern Social Table and Bar and all the other restaurants with your hospitality kitchens. We're grateful to have you here. And I'd also like to thank AOC Community Media and William McFarlane, our producer, for allowing this podcast to happen. This is Discover Lafayette. You can find us online at discoverlafayette.net. You can get this podcast and all of our podcasts on any place such as iTunes, Stitcher, where you get your podcast media. Please check us out, and if you can take a moment to leave a favorable review, we'd appreciate it. I'm Jan Swift with Discover Lafayette.
The views and opinions expressed on this or any program on the AOC Podcast Network do not reflect the views and opinions of Lafayette Consolidated Government, Cox Communications, LUS Fiber, AOC Community Media, its board of directors, or its staff. To learn more about becoming a community media producer, visit us on the web at aocinc.org.